Hallo, hallo, hallo.
So, welcome to this this seminar lecture event. Before I introduce the speaker, I've got another important announcement to make, and that is Holmenkollstafett. This one, I've got to use this one. Holmenkollstafett is coming up, and Gjøvik is going to have at least one team, probably two teams. The race is on for 13th of May, like in 1 month and a bit. And you should contact me if you want to join the team. I've sent out an invite. A lot of people have registered, roughly 30 people, but we need a few more. So please contact me. And now for the main event of today. Adam Zizekas is my PhD student, and he's adding value to the information security field by having a background which is very different from your background. In fact, he is a psychologist. He's been studying psychology for at least 5 years, and he knows all the tricks of the trade, and now he's going to apply all those ideas to our information security area. And we will be in the research project. He will be studying prediction or human behavior predictions. And that is what you will be telling us a bit about today, Adam.
Yeah,
is that correct?
That's
okay, so tell us a story.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four, five. Right. Thank you. No signal. I hope it stays like this. So thank you for the introduction. My name is Adam Sekeres, and I'd like to talk about my research topic today. I should start off by saying that the title refers to the desired end goal, which my project is aiming for. But it represents the basic the main topics within my research, which is the prediction of human behavior, and it's connected into to the smart grid, smart electric grid project. The main objectives are to identify and integrate relevant psychological theories into the conflicting incentives risk analysis framework, which was developed here and takes a novel perspective about risks, focusing on human decision making in order to enable the method to be applicable on real life scenarios. We need to integrate behavior prediction capabilities, and the application is on smart grid critical infrastructure scenarios. So to start off with one of the most famous attacks involving the electrical grids happened in 2015 in Ukraine. As a result of a very sophisticated attack, 30 substations were taken down, more than 200,000 residents were left without electricity. 2 months after the attack, still the control centers were not fully operational, and they have to operators had to rely on manual operation. During the analysis of the events, it was evident that it was a sophisticated, well-organized attack, not just some random opportunity showing itself that's been exploited. So the attacks began with a phishing campaign targeting IT staffs and system administrators working for the DSOs. Within these targeted emails, a malicious Word document was attached that had to be downloaded, and the macros had to be enabled. So this was a pretty old school attack. Still, it shows that it still can be efficiently exploited. When the operator complied with the request, Black Energy program infected the system and opened the back door to the hackers. Then, from this situation, they had to access the SCADA networks that controlled the grid, and they harvested worker credentials, which allowed them to gain access to the SCADA systems and take down huge parts of the system. Now, in this case, it is important to identify which factors were contributing to this huge scale attack, and one of them is that it is widely recognized now that people are the weakest link in any system and in system security, and even one people is critical too, because if even one people is unaware of a threat or complies with a request that has malicious intent, that has huge effects for, let's say, 200,000 people. So it seems like that it's a battle on two fronts, within the walls of the organization. There are insiders which could mean malicious actors, and could mean people without malicious intents, but they could be target of malicious outsiders, which are hackers. And on both sides, the human factor manifests itself either by as a vulnerability or a weakness. On the other side, there's a lot of creativity, perseverance, and skills how to manipulate people into acting as desired, or how to exploit system vulnerabilities. Previous investigations have focused on different motivations. In case of the insider threat, it is very often greed or revenge due to stress, espionage, or a possible business advantage. While in the hacking community, starters usually are motivated by fun and the adventure, or need for recognition and fame, while it's also a huge business where large amounts of money is involved, and political and terrorist motives are presenting themselves in the cyberspace as well. So in the conflicting incentive risk analysis framework, we have two types of stakeholders. The risk owner, whose perspective is taken during the risk analysis. He's the person who is exposed to the decisions made by the strategy owner. The strategy owner is capable of having an influence on the risk owner and his own benefit, and he has a set of strategies which define the possible actions that he can take. So this risk analysis framework focuses on motivated decision making, meaning that decision making in its simplest terms can be defined as a selection between different choices, and the motivation to select beneficial or least beneficial choice depends on the motivation behind these decisions. The importance of negative externalities, as highlighted in the Ukrainian case, meaning that a lot of people were involved who did not choose to be involved in this transaction. Even one person's failure to act properly can have great consequences to others. Within the CIRA framework, the human model is based on the rational behavior in an economic sense, which is utility optimizing and trying to maximize a certain utility or benefit. It is represented by a set of utility factors, and the utility factors have certain characteristics like weight, which define how important that factor is in the person's utility function, an initial value which defines the current state, that could be the current monetary situation, and the final value which describes the desirable end state. The difference between these two states captures the motivation to trigger an action or not. And through these strategies, the strategies basically define how
how the utility functions can influence, can be influenced both for the strategy owner and the risk owner. Now the aim of risk assessment in psychology in general is to provide protection for society from potentially dangerous individuals by attempting to predict their behavior. And during the years and the vast amounts of research, certain predictor variables could be identified, which are predicting the potential future behavior, like past violence, pre-existing vulnerabilities, social and interpersonal factors, mental illnesses, and so on. So, in a similar sense, there's a growing amount of literature on the different kinds of personal and factors, organizational factors as well, that might contribute to a higher risk of employees becoming threats to the organizations. None of these factors can individually explain or predict a certain insider threat. However, a combination or an aggregation of these might be an indication of a high risk. These behaviors are defined, not easy to detect, and therefore they pose a huge challenge in order to predict or to detect and efficiently predict the unwanted behaviors. Now, revenge, as it has been listed previously, could be a very important motivation. In the ultimatum game, it is very well investigated or widely investigated that people are motivated to punish the other player for an undesirable or an unfair behavior. So in this game, there are two players, and the rule is that a sum of money is offered for the sum of money should be divided between the two players, and there's an offer that has to be accepted by the responder, and when this offer is below a certain threshold that seems to be fair, no one will get any money. So it shows that it shows that people are motivated to punish unfair behavior, even at the expense of taking a loss for themselves. However, a rational actor would be motivated to accept even the lowest offer, because that would increase his utility. There's a growing trend, which is also a highly sophisticated attack against organizations, and it involves the impersonation of the CEO and personally defined request is sent to the financial officer, which asks for a confidential fund transfer, an immediate fund transfer. This CEO scam has been shown that caused a lot of loss for different companies. There's a decision when someone gets the request. There's a decision to comply automatically with the request, or to take the time and double check if it's a valid request or not. Now, some factors which might contribute to the efficiency of this scam is that it creates a time pressure and a sense of urgency that increases the level of stress and that reduces the ability to analyze the situation or to think it about clearly. It creates a sense of specialty or a trust, as it is often framed as a trusted request. Furthermore, it's coming from an authority figure. It seems to be coming from an authority figure, which is also a significant factor, as obedience to authority is a widely investigated issue in psychology, and the famous Milgram experiments are describing this situation. Furthermore, it could be a lack of awareness or an optimism bias, meaning that people think that they are less likely to be at risk than others, and these factors might all contribute to the vulnerability. Now, one of the most influential theories of decision making is the prospect theory, the work of Tversky and Kahneman, which is Kahneman got the Nobel Prize in Economics for his work on identifying factors and discovering for his discoveries in relation to decision making under uncertainty. And the prospect theory was one of the seminal works that started the behavioral economic tradition, which tries to measure how people actually make decisions compared to as the normative theories of decision making. So there are many violations of the standard economic model, and this is represented by the value function. It shows that there's a general tendency to avoid losses because the psychological or subjective value of a loss of the same amount is much bigger than the gain. So losing 10 crowns might feel like that could be compensated only by gaining 40 crowns. The importance of reference point is at the intersection of the of the graph, and the idea that people are not so much interested about absolute outcomes, they are more interested in how they reach that actual point, meaning that two people with $1 million wouldn't experience the same happiness if one of them won the $100 or $1 million, while the other one lost $9 million, but they have the same amount at the moment. And the fourth fault pattern of risk attitudes is that there's a risk aversion for gains and risk seeking for losses of high probability, while there's a risk seeking for gains and risk for losses of low probability. There's also a violation that defines that people's preferences are non-linear, meaning that how people experience or understand probabilities is quite biased or different from the optimal assumptions. And it's very important in probabilities when the difference between a sure thing and a highly probable thing is much more than a difference elsewhere on the value functions. So the actual real probabilities are transformed such that lower probabilities are overweighted and higher probabilities are underweighted. One of the other violation is the effect of how frames operate. This is demonstrated through the famous Asian disease problem. It's an imaginary scenario where a rare disease is about to reach a U.S. Village, and there are two alternatives to treat people, all with known probabilities and outcomes. So in this, in total, 600 people would be affected by the disease, and program A offers a solution that saves 200 people, while program B offers a solution that there's a 1/3 probability that 600 people will be saved and 2/3 probability that no people will be saved. When these two decisions are presented, 72% of the people choose program A. To a second group of participants, a very similar decision is presented, which is equivalent in the expected outcomes. However, in this case, there's a reversal of preferences, meaning that in this situation, the majority would choose program D, which is equivalent to program B. Actually, all that is changed is how the problem is presented. The theory of basic human values is a central theory that tries to encompass all the theories based on the need and drive theories, and it's been shown to be very useful in cross-cultural comparisons. They represent conscious goals which define universal requirements of human existence, namely the needs of individuals and requisites for coordinated social interaction and survival and welfare needs of groups. These values are supposed to be underlying all our evaluations and guiding our decisions. They are they are transsituational and said to be quite stable. In one study, the value constellation predicted unethical behavior, which was operationalized as a violation of ethical norms or a lying in return for a monetary gain. The results show that cheating in this setting positively correlated with the self-enhancement values and negatively correlated with the conversation values. One of the main theories that identify that deal with the prediction of human behavior explicitly is the theory of planned behavior, and it shows that attitudes, norms, and the perceived behavioral control are the most important concepts in predicting intentions, which are the antecedents of the actual behavior. However, its usefulness is debated within risk analysis or the risk assessments, because it relies on honest self-reported questionnaires, which are not feasible in this situation. The goal of profiling in criminology, for example, is the goal is to identify and infer behavior determinants that are most relevant to predict a certain kind of behavior. In case of deviant behaviors, for example, it's well established what kind of predictors should be taken care of or should be investigated. However, in case of risk analysis or in the CIRA framework, it's difficult to identify if it's so there are behaviors which might be deviant or unethical. However, it's not capturing the whole picture. A few challenges is that in the literature, motivation and decision making are mainly investigated separately from each other, and there's a huge amount of different approaches to the motivational the construct of motivation. This unified model shows that or provides a framework for organizing existing models, and selection is a challenging task in this case. So a few more challenges is that it's very difficult to obtain real valuable data from organizations and actual human subjects as well. So the conventional data collection methods like interviews, questionnaires and surveys are not really suitable for risk analysis. So alternative methods have to be considered. The conclusion is that, as I've mentioned, within CIRA tries to capture a wide range of behaviors that include basically all of the existing work which has been done in the information security domain and the intersection of psychology, but it extends to much more to a more wider range of behaviors that are not necessarily malicious or unethical or deviant. And this is only one part of the picture. Relatively unexplored area is the opportunity risk, which defines situations where one is not motivated enough to act in a desirable way. That could also define risk situations. So probably one mistake I made is that I was trying to so far to find a unifying theory that can explain all these different kinds of behaviors and then the decisions that are made. But it seems likely that there's no single theory that can explain the variety of what we are interested in. So the idea is now is to decompose the great problem into smaller ones and tackle them separately. Okay, thank you. And if you have questions.
Thank you very much, Adam. So, questions? Right. Okay, Vivek.
Yeah, could you please go to slide number 15? Okay, this one. So, maybe I understood in a wrong manner, but you are saying that so there was a survey and people were presented with two ideas. In the first one, they were said that 200 people will be saved, and in the second one, there is a slight twist, and basically it also means that 200 people will be saved. It's like one third of the probability, but there is some extra information.
Yeah.
So are you trying to say that both the statements are basically same, but people interpret it in a different way? Because I feel that they are substantially different. In the first one, you are saying the exact information. In the second one, you are saying you are using word probability, and that opens the door towards chance, likelihood. So there's uncertainty that, okay, 200 people will be saved or they might not be saved, the first thing. And second, in the first one, in order to match it completely, it could be like 200 people will be saved. At the same time, 400 people might die. Because you are not saying about 600 in the program A. So how does it look same?
Yeah, so it's true that the program A, for example, is underdefined, so it doesn't say anything about the other people, and the idea is that the expected value of both solutions would be the same, meaning that if people were to use the consciously calculate the expected value as prescribed by the normative theories, then a one-third probability multiplied by the 600 people, that would give a amount of 200 people being saved. But
in the program A, were they aware of the fact that there are 600 people and only 200 people will be saved?
Sorry?
In program A.
Yeah.
Where the people were aware that there's a group.
There's a total of 600. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So it was presented like this in a group of 600 people.
Okay.
So it was known that the total amount of people is 600, which would be affected.
So the basic idea is that first I ask you, would you go for A or B? Okay, you say something. You say A, and then we ask you the same one. This one, we frame it like this, and ask you, do you want to go for C or D? Right? And then this way of framing it is slightly different from this one, but basically we're asking you the same thing. And the surprising thing is that they go for here, they go for certainty, here they go for this one. Okay? So that is what is the, the interesting observation. Depending on how it's framed, people kind of move from the first option. which is it's the same question, but it's framed differently. And, and this way of presenting it, you get a different distribution of the response.
And there's a criticism which you pointed out that it's this is a one-time decision where.
Actually, I'm mainly concerned that when you ask someone, you use some terms or word that you are well aware of, but maybe people interpret in a very different manner, and they use their subjective opinion or maybe background, education or culture to understand it. So that's what I'm thinking, that if I'm presented with the word probability, I may interpret in a different manner than maybe someone else interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be the bias that can be included in the survey response. So this was my concern. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
There was another question.
Do you hear me? Probably. But not through the, the loudspeaker. Okay, so is it really necessary that we obey all the rules all the time? Most progress in history has been made by breaking some rules.
Can we make
something like fuzzy behavior model?
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with the fuzzy behavior model, but it depends on how the problem is framed, probably. So the same people could be viewed as a traitor within a company, or others could see him as a...
Or maybe just a whistleblower.
Or a whistleblower.
Wishing a good thing to the company and criticizing the policy set up by incompetent people.
Yeah, so these are not easily decidable questions, and they usually depend on probably how you... frame or what's your worldview and what's your underlying beliefs are. It's
just a question to think about. Yeah,
yeah, but I face this dilemma a lot because some activities might not be unethical. From the point of view who's acting, or he might be acting in his not only in his self-interest but also in hope to help others, being unaware that he might cause with the behavior and decisions he might cause a bigger trouble for other group of people. So there's a limit basically on how much There are limitations of the cognitive capabilities and the information that's available for decision maker and all these.
I have another question.
But we want to make sure that if there is a master student there, is there a master student there? All master students? Are you all PhD students, members of staff or other courses? Master students are back? No, you're not master.
No, just PhD, postdoc.
You're not a master student. Are you a master student? Absolutely not a master student. I've got three of these. What do I do?
Then you have to move up to PhD
student. Okay, so PhD student. Okay, so we have
more PhD students.
First, and overspending is understanding.
Okay, right. Okay, so Vivek has already asked, so he's getting a gift. Another PhD student. Come on, man. Ask a question.
I took my PhD some time ago. I don't need that.
That's good enough.
What was the this is a very interesting slide, and I, with my background, I have a particular conclusion when I see these numbers. But what is your conclusion, or what was the paper's conclusion?
The paper's conclusion was that so that just depending on how the same question is presented, there's a pattern reversal which violates the basic rationality. There should be a how a situation is presented should define the decisions that are made based on that, and that's
He says that if it says 400 will die, I'm not sure what happens to the other 200. It doesn't explicitly state. Yeah, so that could be interpreted. I don't know if this was the exact wording.
But the same for A. You cannot say if 200 people will be saved, it doesn't mean that the other 400 will die.
I guess the wording is...
That's not really the point. No. The point is that they will go the other way. So 200 will be saved, 400 will die, 400 people die, and saved.
But then it should be written there. So
no, because if you write it there, then you have twice the exact statement, except that you...
Yeah, but
so you can't, you can't do that.
In other case, it affects how people perceive.
Yeah, yeah,
probably.
So it's, and this one is the same, but the interesting thing is that you get a reversal, but basically, AMC are the same, but they've kind of treated differently. Do you prefer this one here and this one there? This is kind of support for the other graph that you had for first gen polymer phosphate theory, isn't that correct?
Yeah, so that was saying in terms of losses that you are talking about people dying, then people are more likely.
I think the safe conclusion is that mathematics education has miserably failed.
And for that,
no.
Perfect conclusion.
No, the student gets the
gift.
No,
give
one. You're going to get one of these one. And I'm spent my budget. Okay, thank you very much. It's 1 o'clock, and it's time to go back.
Catch this box, please.
Denne personen, at dette var en god deal for hele gjengen.
how they will present it to people in the server. I mean,
that's the exact wording.
Yeah, but were they able to see all together four stadiums? So
the idea was that AD presented for a group of people,
and another group of people was viewing.